You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Minutes after 8 o'clock here on a Wednesday, hump day, across the United States and in most of the world. Joining me is a friend of mine who I've known since 1990 or thereabouts, David J. Furness. We are Battle Buddies times three, and I only say that, I think, with one other human being, and that's Mike Musselman. So, General, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. The official title is the Legislative Assistant to the Commandant, and
that's the official title.
While that looks a lot like lobbying, it is not. Am I correct on that?
It is not. That's correct. That's you. I trained you well.
You did. I've learned that. It might look a lot like it, but I can tell you, it's legally prohibited,
it's not.
And that is not what we do.
Right. That's correct.
You just so people know. Your function as the Commandant's liaison on Capitol Hill is to bring most of the time bad news, money news, and answer questions from members of Congress. Is that, you know, whether it be the a suicide at Paris Island and the subsequent investigation or incidents like Marines United, you are the guy that, essentially is the Commandant's go-between, yes?
That's correct. I mean, I facilitate information flow between the headquarters and the Congress of the United States, both members and professionals and personal staff. You know, we also do good news. It's just, it always seems to focus on the bad news. I mean, my first priorities are that no bad news. If there is bad news, I'm the one telling them, or one of my people. So we get there first before they read about it, hear about it, and watch it on TV. And that's important because that breeds trust. And, you know, you got to work from a position of trust with members and staff if you hope to get anything done in this business. And we hope to maintain that even through the bad news.
All right. And we know there's going to be bad news. It's just the nature of the business. So it is what it is.
It is.
All right.
It is.
Okay, last week, the Marine Corps, top of the fold headlines across the nation, relative to Marines United and then the Commandant's appearance, before the Senate Armed Service Committee and then the House Armed Service Committee. You attended both of those events. I'm curious in terms of, the politics of all this. Both were scheduled to be closed hearings. Why were they scheduled to be closed hearings, and then what was the rationale behind opening the Senate Armed Service Committee?
Well, they were scheduled to be closed because we've had the specter of undue command influence. A member asked the Commandant a question. He answers it, and he wants to be definitive in the answer. You know, he can get outside the lane that the lawyers want to keep him in as the head of the service, and you start getting the specter of undue command influence that every defense lawyer can bring up for any case that you're going to attempt to prosecute on any issue germane to what we're talking about this morning. So that was primarily the reason for it to be scheduled to be a briefing. A briefing is closed. The hearing is open. So a briefing vice a hearing.
Right.
The other aspect of it is you can, because it's closed, there's no press, there's no record of it, there was a thought that you could have a dialogue, vice, statements posing as questions, to make political points, and then the Commandant would be more free to answer, and, a little bit more relaxed setting than the back and forth of a hearing. The reason both bodies, both the SASC and the HASC, wanted to do that. There was pressure from certain members of the SASC that they believe it needed to be open, and both so that for the seriousness of the topic, number one, and number two, to allow the Commandant to get on record. They believed that was important. So they changed it to a half open and then an executive closed session afterwards. So we were up on the SASC for almost 4 hours, and we were in a closed briefing at the HASC for probably 2.5 on Thursday of that week. So
much of it the same content?
Yeah, it was the same discussion. You know, tough questions of the Marine Corps, as there should be. You know, the nation's political leaders have an oversight responsibility of the armed forces, members of Congress. It's a role that the two authorization committees take very seriously. So we had to answer tough questions. You know, why did this happen? Is there a cultural problem? And why do you know, you said you would take care of it in 13. It's 2017. We're still seeing it. Why? So those are tough questions to answer, and the Commandant, I think, did a very good job of articulating those in both the close or the open and closed portions of the testimony that week.
All right. Let's talk about the issue itself. This is an issue in every elementary school, in every middle school, every high school, and every university around the nation. And that is, as soon as somebody gets a phone with a camera and the ability to message, you have a certain element of a grammar school. And I was talking to a former high school football coach about it. He said, we deal with this in grammar school for now. So this is part of our society, the way young people grow up today, which is anonymously on the Internet. And, you know, they can say what they want. They can do what they want. And then we assimilate them into the Marine Corps. I'm not trying to make an excuse for the behavior, but when you try to get your arms around the behavior, how do we as a Corps kind of do that? Or is it just take the face shot, there is no rationale for it, don't make an excuse for it, and then fix it?
Well, I think you don't make any excuses for it. I think Marines, and I think you would, you know, you wear the, you know, you have worn the uniform, your sons wear currently wearing the uniform. All of us wear the uniform. We hold ourselves to a higher standard than the society from which we come. I mean, Marines are special. We believe that. We train them harder than other forces. We expect more of them, and they're supposed to act accordingly. We believe we're the most disciplined force. Those are things that we are like core kind of beliefs, and so if you take that, then this kind of conduct is outrageous. It's and we can't condone it in any way, shape, or form, or make excuses for it. And I don't think the institution has. So we acknowledge that it's prevalent in civilian society, and we acknowledge that the people that we, both the men and women we bring into the service, are going to be quite comfortable doing that the first day they arrive on the old footprints. I think what we have to attack this from both a leadership perspective, number one, okay, we can't wink and nod. We have to have good authorities both in the UCMJ, Marine Corps orders that regulate this behavior, and so commanders actually know what they can and cannot do. And this is important because these issues of the Internet kind of bump up against the First and Fourth Amendment. And so it's a lot of commanders heretofore say, I probably can't do anything. We have to articulate that from a headquarters perspective on educating the leadership about what they can and cannot do with respect to this. That's number one. Number two, leaders have to be out front and not only not condoning it, but you have to, as a commander, one of your roles is you talk to your Marines about what you expect of them and how they're to act. And I think commanders have to do a better job in addressing this issue in commander's time. You know, when you're giving your safety briefs, when you're walking around the motor pool, when you're out at the training ranges and you're talking to Marines, getting to know them, this has got to be clear that we expect more of you in this domain. And you're not anonymous, okay? Don't think that, you know, I can be Corporal Furness during the day, and at night I can, you know, I can get an avatar linked to a email account that doesn't have my name on it, and I can act any way I want on the net. You can't. And I think so there's that aspect of it. We have to get out there and be an evangelist for better behavior. The big thing is we've got to teach Marines it's never okay to demean anybody on the team. And so if you've earned the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor, you earned the title Marine. You've also earned the respect of your teammates. And we will not tolerate people denigrating members of the team for whatever reason. And that has to be something that we, as a leadership aspect on this. Consequently, on education, from the moment they say, I want to be a Marine in the delayed entry program. So in the delayed entry program, in the DEP, we call it, on recruiting, and then once they hit the entry-level training pipeline, we have to do a better job in the transformation process of actually, you know, stipulating, educating what type of behavior is condoned, what type of behavior is not condoned. We've attacked these issues before. We did it with race in the, after Vietnam in the 70s. We did it with drugs at the same time frame. And, you know, when they first did piss tests, it was not uncommon if you listen to the old salts, like when we came in, and, you know, in the 80s, and we would complain when one guy would pop positive. He said, hey, when we first did this, the battalion would have like 300 people pop, including some officers. By the time you and I joined the force, that just didn't happen, okay? Whether it was condoned, wink and nod, you know, you weren't, it wasn't anymore. You weren't getting another opportunity if you were caught doing it. You were out of the Corps. So I think how we handle it, how we adjudicate it, what we tolerate, you know, what type of – and this conduct on the social media sites is a wide spectrum, everywhere from, you know, comments that we consider, okay, that's not the brightest thing to say, all the way to criminal.
Right.
And so it's hard to identify. But once we do, we have to go out. We must hold people accountable, and we may determine as a service that if you even touch this third rail, anywhere on the spectrum, or at least on part of the spectrum, that you know you're going to either get you're going to held accountable through either NJP or court martial or administrative action. But we don't need you in the Corps anymore. And if we hold those lines and we educate well and we lead well, then over time, the effect will be this kind of conduct, which is, I think, a minority of Marines serving today. But even that will become, we won't condone it. It won't become tolerated, and it'll go away, or it'll get further pressed into darker recesses where it never rears its ugly head. And I think, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we don't have race, you know, problems in the Marine Corps, or there's not racist views held by members of the Marine Corps. But I can tell you it's not tolerated. And I tell you if you do it, you're done.
Right.
And I think that's where this has to go. And I think what will help is better, like, rules and regulations and understanding of how to address the issue, both administratively and legally. And then we just got to get out there on the bully pulpit and just – teach Marines, you know, part of our culture is like we're intolerant of non-hacking, right?
Right.
We're intolerant of not holding the standard. Well, we are. But that means every standard. Now, we have rules about this, but, you know, while somebody can be adamant about the PFT, you know, they may be, oh, this is a standard that I don't. You know, I don't believe it. Well, you don't get that choice, devil dog. All the rules and regulations are there to create an environment of discipline so the members of the Marine Corps know when they go forward they can trust everybody on the right and left. Those standards are inviolate, and we believe that, more so than any other service. So if there is a service, we're kind of out in front on this one at the moment. I think if there's a service that's going to get its hands around it, it'll be the Marine Corps.
All right, I want to address a few specifics of the issue. The UCMJ, does it address this specifically? And what it does, Article 120 Charlie addresses the Peeping Tom guy, he steals an image. I think when you look at that, though, what it doesn't address, I would say, is the majority of this is just my sense of these instances, and that is, I get this consensually. Nobody's
right.
I didn't steal this. She sent it to me. Now,
right.
Who does that belong to me now? I didn't, you know.
Right.
And then when we break up and I put it on. Now, when you weaponize it, clearly that there's 35 states in the District of Columbia have revenge porn laws. That is when you weaponize that by putting her contact information and something that's clearly covered. What's not covered is the transmission of something sent to you with the expectation of privacy. And given how prevalent that is in the culture that young Marines come from, and young soldiers, sailors, airmen, Coast Guardmen, whatever, whoever's covered by the UCMJ, does this thing need to be spelled out specifically, very bluntly, in the UCMJ?
Right. I think in Congress right now, there's some different initiatives afoot. We are also going to recommend language that tightens 120 up.
Okay.
Because, right, is that my property? Can I do with my property what I want? The other thing is if I'm on a private invitation-only site and then there's a more private link to that site, is there an expectation of privacy? So we have to get through that. And I think the knee-jerk reaction at the moment is we're going to hammer the snot out of folks, right? We're going to tighten 120 up. We're going to use 133, 134, maybe Article 92, and we'll get at this. And then I would estimate that the lawyers, the civil liberty lawyers, and the people who believe the Internet should be the ungoverned, free, and open space that, you know, heretofore it has been, are going to crack back somewhat. So, okay, this, we're horrified. We're going to get on top of this. We're going to tighten some rules and regulations in the armed forces. We're going to deal with it a certain way. But there are going to be the issue is, okay, so a former Marine, you know, what do you do to a guy in the IRR? What do you do to somebody who got out and is just a civilian now, but is the, you know, I was in the Marine Corps from 82 to 86. And this is what I believe. What do you do with that guy? There were members of Congress that said we should be able to do something to those folks because that's how upset they are.
Right.
Well, those people are actually called American citizens, and they have a few more rights than, you know, we do when you agree to put the uniform on and agree to live by the code that we want to live by. So all that stuff has got to be worked out. So what I think will occur is, you know, we'll have some strengthening of 120, and that will allow us to get at, if you give this to me before you put it on and post it anywhere, you have to get my consent.
Right.
And if you don't, that is – now, it may be, you know, that may be something that all you can do is take a guy to NGP. Did you do it? Yeah, I did. Okay. Admin discharge. Okay. Because at some point, what we're going to have to do is to illustrate that we don't tolerate. There are going to be some people that are going to have to be shown the door. That may be, in fact, other than this minor, you know, and it's not minor, this egregious foul have served honorably. But you're going to have to show a few of those to the door to get people's attention. And then I think you just have to, and what we, I think what we haven't realized as well as we should have, so this is on us, but with the Marine Corps personnel management model being that we enlist 35,000 Marines a year and we discharge about the same number, that in a four-year enlistment we churn 120,000 Marines through the system, and you never get to a point where you can, you know, rest on your laurels and and not attack this, because, you know, if you do it for 2 years, well, there's 60,000 people you haven't touched or haven't touched as well. So this is the continuing action because of our personnel model. And the model is young, 18, 25, 60, more than 60% of the Marine Corps is is under 25. We're 92% male. We have the demographics that make this as challenging as it could be, and we just have to recognize that and deal with it through leadership, accountability, and training and education. And I think if we do that with a focus on eradicating this, it's never going to be completely eradicated, because it's like you can't get rid of poverty and injustice anywhere, but you can make it so that if you do it and you find out about it, then you're going to protect the victims, and there's things we're going to do to help them if this occurs. And we already have that kind of system in place, so we have services that we can provide them. You know, we can take images off the net if they tell us to. If they say, I want my image taken down, we have ways to do that. And those authorities need to be, you know, kind of better spelled out, because we currently don't do that, you know. But do we have the capability? Well, yeah, you go to NSA, they can do about anything they want on the net. But they're not authorized to do it with American citizens. So you got to get to a point where if I'm a victim and I say, yeah, this is what happened to me, here it is, here's the link, you can go, and there's a process to protect them, to help them through this, as well as you're going to continually play whack-a-mole with that image. Because what we also have found out is you take a site down, 2 days later it's up someplace else. And then it's up for a week, it's down, it's up another place. And they're moving them around. And we're currently on Marines United version 5.0. And they're just moving it around to make it more survivable, you know, in a, you know, mobility parlance. And so there's a challenge with that. It's hard for NCIS and the investigative folks to get at these, to get attributable stuff. We don't know currently whether we even have one prosecutable case as it stands now. And so once they're done with their investigation and they say, okay, you know, we looked at all these pictures at all these sites and here's what we have, you know, we'll go forward and hold people accountable. And then we got to get to a state where that's just we're continually to do this. We'd like to be able to get left of boom, but the hard part about that is we're not going to be able to surveil the internet for these sites. So what we're going to have to rely on, out there.
Why not?
Because it's Fourth Amendment privacy. You can't spy on U.S. citizens.
So we can't. I had Kate Germano on last week, and so
right. She
was talking about that there ought to be the capability resident within, let's just say, each MEF, that civilian contractors that monitor the net for this kind of behavior. Is that a violation of the Fourth Amendment?
I'm not a lawyer.
Okay.
But I believe if it's not, it's very close. So those things have got to be specified out.
Okay.
What we believe is that individual Marines, you know, part of our education is you can't be a bystander to this. Just like in sexual assault.
Let me ask you about that. Is it equally as disturbing, and I'll just use the numbers that came out. By the way, you can filibuster, just so you know. You can, you're a great guest on a talk show because you're not afraid of the spoken word. I think a lot of people are very surprised, that the turnover in the Marine Corps and the percentage of the Marine Corps under the age of 25. I think that at that hearing was somewhat of a jaw-dropping moment. What? The force is 180 whatever it is at the moment.
4,000.
Right. And 62% of it is under the age of 25, and we turn over 100,000 people in that organization approximately every 3 years. That's
right.
Mind-blowing in terms of the youthful nature of that organization.
Right.
Okay. So I think that was incredibly. I'll ask you a black and white question, and I know you're going to take me to the gray area, but I'll ask you black and white. Have we done enough classes, and is it time for people to have the wood laid to them? Or is it a combination of there's elements of this that we haven't dressed well enough, and we need to get after those, and we need to lay the wood?
I think the latter. I think certainly in 2013, we we did a ton of education in the sexual assault venue that is part of this. You know, I think, you know, part of this in 2013, we did a service level planning event, you know, a planning team to look at our problem with sexual assault.
Explain that. So explain service level.
That means it was run by through headquarters Marine Corps. The OPT leader was a 3-star. You TAD'd folks for the length of the planning team to Quantico.
Okay.
They sat for more than a month sequestered looking at this problem, bringing in, you know, outside expertise, et cetera, et cetera. So,
okay.
And it was a very – they did very good work. I think what happened with that is we totally revamped our how we educate on this. We brought in highly qualified experts for trial teams. We re-energized our victim advocacy, the training of those. We also did victim legal counsel was stood up. Some of this was our ideas. Some of this was ideas of Congress. And so through that, I think we did well on the how we trained this. It wasn't just the annual training before the rifle range. Okay, sexual assault's bad. Don't do it. Next, we've got hazing. Hazing's bad. Don't do it. And the 400 topics you have to hit every year. We didn't give that one short shift. I mean, we did interactive discussion groups with videos and all kind of things. And we tried to update the training to the 21st century. We didn't discuss online behavior. So you'd think, I mean, we may have thought or we may not have thought about it, because you got to remember the people that are leading the organization, they are not on Facebook doing it. I mean, we just, it's like me, I don't have a social media account. I don't have a cell phone. I'm a curmudgeon. And
oh, no, you're worse than that. If you're not there, well, and again, is that part of the problem? Should you be required to at least, because you're absent from the battlefield?
Well, what we have is our public affairs people, they monitor these things for the, like, Word Marine, Semper Fi, all that. So they see what's out there.
Yeah, but the public affairs people, they couldn't even identify the guys in the Iwo Jima flag raising appropriately for 70 years. Right?
Right.
Same group?
Okay.
You're going to sell me that?
No, well said. Thanks for backing on that one. So it's not like, and we have obviously media, but J. Walter Thompson, our advertisers,
right,
do it as well. Okay, so it's not like it's not being done. But, I mean, for a general officer, I mean, I ain't got no time to do it. I mean, my wife has a Facebook page, and she'll tell me some stuff, but I don't have time to go up there and post. I don't look at it. I mean, it's just one of those things. That's not my generation.
Right. So, I you know what? Maybe, I get it. I get it, but I think that it ought to be, I mean, this is just me. I think it ought to be a requirement. I think that and you don't have to be inactive. Hey, had ham and eggs this morning for breakfast. You don't have to, but I think there ought to be a requirement that you gotta visit the battlefield. You gotta be a part of it. You gotta look at it. And again, I thought it was another illustrative point when the commandant looked at senators and said, I don't do social media. I don't understand it well enough. And I think that's a bit of a problem. So just my opinion.
Right. No, I'm not going to disagree with you. I just think, one, I think that problem corrects itself over time. That's number one. Number two, I think what we don't understand is some social behavior. You know, the young man who does, the comic strip, you know, Terminal Land.
Right.
The commandant talks to him frequently because he's kind of like, you know, a spokesman for this generation.
Right. No, true.
And so he has contact with him. So when this blew up, you know, if you saw Terminal Land, he kind of went on an editorial comment and taking Marines to task for doing this stuff. But he also explained to the commandant, like, look, you know, I know you don't understand why somebody would take a naked picture of themselves and send it to somebody. He goes, for our generation, it's like sending a Christmas card. We don't think about it. And I'm like, okay. And I'm not trying to do victim blaming here, but maybe we need to teach Marines, look, you know, that's probably, you might have done it before. You may not want to do that. We certainly, as Marines, don't want you to do that. But, you know, we're more disturbed by the demeaning comments to the pictures, you know, okay, even if the picture was taken, and truth be known, we haven't come across one yet that was not taken with consent. Like, either somebody took it, like, hey, take a picture of me, or I did it myself and then gave it to somebody. That's what I've been told. So,
okay.
But it doesn't matter. You know, the comments of treating a teammate like that really concern the commandant. So we've got to get after that.
Okay. You know, what's interesting is the whole concept of victim blaming, which is kind of illustrative of your point. The current people that comprise 60%+ of the Marine Corps, if you said, hey, well, we have to really question why she's taking that, they would look at you like you have seven heads.
Oh, I know.
And should
know.
Be, so, you know what I mean? So they look like, what? Like,
you know,
wait a minute, the whole world that we know is taking naked pictures. You know, the fact that you aren't, you know, means that you should probably be in a museum, or maybe you don't want to take a naked picture of yourself, okay? That's a personal
issue. I don't.
That's a personal issue. But in the world that I live in, are you kidding me?
Right.
It's just the way it is. So why would you even question that? Which is part of this thing, an interesting thing. Here's another question for you as we kind of migrate through this. Is it more disturbing, let's say the 500, the number I saw was at the time of the hearing, 500 or fewer people access this hard drive that have the images on it. However, there was 29,500 members that were part of it. Was it the lack of response for the 29,500 more disturbing than the behavior of the 500? Because to me, the crux of the dilemma for the Marine Corps is, look, idiots are always going to be idiots. I can fix a lot of things. I can't fix stupid. So if you think weaponizing an image, an intimate image of your old girlfriend and putting it on the internet with her contact information is the right thing for you, there's really not a whole lot I can do with you except throw your ass out of the Marine Corps. However, the rest of you, we need to sit down and have a talk with, well, in terms of, yeah, that sucked, and yeah, too bad for them. And then I'm on to the next thing. Is that more disturbing behavior?
It's equally disturbing, I think. I don't know if it's more disturbing, but I think what we've seen post-event, again, right of boom, is from our folks in the PA that track all this, is there's been a huge backlash from Marines who are just as horrified as you and I that are expressing it on social media, and providing tips to NCIS to try to get at this problem. So I think, which we're heartened to see, but it doesn't. So Marines United started out, you know, 5-7 years ago as a site that was like you and I would get on it and talk about our issues with PTS, and it would help us. Somewhere along the line, somebody just brought idea to have a link to a more private site where these pictures were. So I'm not sure, and this is what I don't know. If I'm on this Facebook page, I don't believe the majority of the people on it saw the comments or saw the pictures because they had to get into that other private site, which was significantly smaller. But they may have known that there wasn't good, you know, nothing good is going on there. And they didn't demand Facebook take it down. You know, once we became aware of it, we said, Facebook, this link is in violation of your terms of service. They took it down. Google took it down. And that's normally what we do. Somebody tells us about a site like this. We inform the service provider. The service provider takes it down. But it just comes up someplace else. So that's playing whack-a-mole. We're still going to have to do that, I think, because, like I said before, other than having sentinels of Marines who aren't going to be bystanders and will not tolerate that themselves, reporting this to folks that then will take those actions, both, you know, technically, i.e. take the site down, take the drive down, and then legally, NCIS investigations, et cetera, all that stuff, we are going to have to rely mostly, I believe, on the reporting of of people who just find this conduct reprehensible. So, I mean, that's how we're going to get over it. Now, how do you get there where more Marines are energized to do that? That's why I think it's a leadership thing. That's why I think it's a training thing. And if you could say, well, that means you haven't been doing it, and I would say you're right. You know, we haven't been doing it well enough. We did it in the sexual assault venue. We may have thought that there would have been trickle-down effects from the training and education and the focus that we put on sexual assault. But they don't view – I mean, this discourse, again, like you said, that starts in elementary school, they don't view it as particularly – they don't think it's against the law. They don't think it's against regulations, and they don't think anything's wrong with it. And so what we have to do is appeal to their pride in being a Marine and that Marines don't act this way. And then legally, we got to strengthen some things so that when people still do this, that there's avenues that commanders can pursue that lead to accountability.
David J. Furness attended college at the Virginia Military Institute. Commissioned an infantry officer and battle buddy of mine times three, CO of 1-1, the CO of the 1st Marine Regiment, and currently the Commandant's legislative assistant, and works on Capitol Hill, our guest this morning. And to my knowledge, the first general officer that's spoken in a public way about these issues. So, Dave, first of all, appreciate you even doing this, and many people are interested in the Marine Corps response and just as it struggles through this issue, because it's not an easy one, and a lot of institutions deal with it. Every university does, certainly, these kind of predatory practices. I want to ask you about we talked about the UCMJ. We talked about a little bit about the NCIS investigation is ongoing, blah, 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 blah. When Kate Germano was on, she talked about how the culture of the Marine Corps. And so I want to take you down two different roads, and we'll start down one of them right now. And that is the way we take Marines into the Marine Corps. And then after that, I want to talk to you about the way we live in the Marine Corps now, which is not the way we used to live, who controls barracks and things like that. So first thing, OCS. Kate Germano's contention is we don't demand what we demand of male Marines, of female Marines. Starting out when they're poolees, we're happy just to make mission. We don't push them too hard because we don't want to quit, because sometimes it's not easy to find women. And then they get to, as a result, they ship. They perform poorly on physical standards. Male Marines see this. They, from the start, have a low opinion of them, and then it's exacerbated, made worse by things like continually low performance on the rifle range, even though there is no gender difference between shooting. So her contention is higher standards for Marines, female Marines, higher standards for female Marines from the time they become poolees, and that we need to recruit young athletes, female athletes, just like we recruit male athletes. And then once we get them, and I'll let you comment on that because you were a recruiter. I want to talk about the OCS model versus what we're doing, in recruit training with the females now. And the OCS model would be a female platoon inside a male company, participating together every day, in the stuff you do. So, address, because to me what she says intellectually makes sense to me. I don't know if in practice that's what happens in the Marine Corps, and so let's talk about that. Let's talk. Go from the RS. Do we have lower standards for females, and can we change that?
No, we don't have the standards for females and males upon accession are the same. That's number one. Now, when I was an RCO, we did not prospect for female applicants. We only prospected for male applicants. In the process of doing so, you found female applicants, and that was sufficient enough to hit the number. Okay? We don't do that anymore. So we currently do actively prospect for females. So we run what we call a high school program for them, just like we do the men. That's a change since, you know, Kate Germano was also an RSCO in San Diego. Right. So that's a change from even when she was on the street, so to speak, as a recruiter. Now, we also have USA Wrestling. Mikric has a relationship with them where we are going after venues where we can find young women like wrestling, you know, athletes that we can convince that this is the way, you know, if you want something tough like wrestling or MMA or boxing, you're the kind of young lady we need in the Marine Corps. And so we are doing that. Now, these initiatives are only a year or two old, so they're in their nascent stages. But we believe that that's going to improve the raw ability, the raw quality of the female applicant, and thus the female junior enlisted who arrives at Parris Island and steps on the yellow footprints. The training at Parris Island is exactly the same. The only difference right now that exists is there are gender-normed physical standards for women, but MOS-specific standards are not gender-normed. They are what they are. So if you want to go in be a tank driver, you have to pass a certain test before you even ship you to the MOS school. If you have that program before you leave Parris Island. And those are all gender neutral. They're just the standard. Males and females have to take the same test. The reason we train them separately at the beginning of the entry-level training pipeline, so understand this, at entry-level training, you have recruit training, then you have Marine combat training, and then you have MOS school, okay? So let's say you're going to be an artillery person, an artillery Marine. You go to boot camp. You pass the gender-neutral standard that allows you to proceed on that MOS path. You go to MCT, Marine Combat Training, which is at the schools of infantry on both East and West Coast. That training is completely integrated, okay? And then MOS school is completely integrated. And the standards in both of those and to get out of and continue on that MOS pipeline are gender neutral as well. So those are, again, changes that we have done in the last year and a half. Also currently there's a Center of Naval Analysis study about where on how we would integrate recruit training even further. Would that produce the same quality of product we believe we produce now? And we also have a blue ribbon panel that we have empowered to look holistically at our entry-level training pipeline, but recruit training specifically. And that is that came as a result of the Siddiqui incident that's currently being adjudicated legally in the Marine Corps, but that happened several years ago.
The Blue Ribbon panel was empaneled several years ago?
No. Probably several months ago. Okay. It was empaneled, but it was a result of the things that we did in response to the Siddiqui incident.
Got it. Okay.
Down at Parris Island.
Okay, hold on. Pause 1 second. You said training at Parris Island is exactly the same, but separate, or the commandant made a comment in his remarks in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee that there was greater integration in training than had ever happened in Parris Island. What did he mean by that?
I think first phase is generally separate, okay?
Okay.
But when they go, they shoot together on the rifle range. They finish together at the Crucible, and they're trained. So let's say we're going to run the confidence course. We can have a male series or platoon or company go through it, and a female company do the same thing at the same time. So Marines see each other, both genders doing the same event at the same time in the same way. McMap training. We have female McMap instructors, you know, instructing females and males and vice versa. So, though, you know, that they can see role model. We do it also at the pool. And so where we can train the two genders together, we're looking for opportunities to do that where it doesn't impact the training. Now, we don't believe, now there's a law that says you can't house men and women in the same squad bag. Okay.
Right.
So,
no, and let me just tell you, no woman that's been on this program believes, wants to have, to be integrated in a squad bag. That not one female Marine I've had on, they see merit, for a few reasons. One is, it's a huge change in your life. One, to join the military. Two, be at the Marine Corps. Three, the physical challenge is substantial for most women, and it helped. They said it helped absolutely to have female leaders and have their own squad base. So I don't know anybody that argues for integrating the squad.
Right. And I was just making the case that at a certain level you have to separate the sexes at entry level training, and there's legal aspects of this. Now, could we have a series, you know, in a company, could you have a female platoon on its own deck in a, you know, in the bigger barracks? You know, we're looking at that.
Which is the OCS model.
Now,
okay.
One of the reasons we have not gone to that model, is that the physical differences between the 18-year-old male and the 18-year-old female are significant. And what we believe is if you train them together early on, like from the first day forward, what the men would see is the women failing. And that would not do anything to engender respect. And so what we do allow is we take them on the same path, but they go through it at their pace. But the end state is, you know, they go through the same crucible as the men do, and they either succeed or fail. And then once they get into MOS school and MCT, they're completely integrated. So we give women the opportunity to
crawl,
gain strength and endurance at their pace by being thrown in the deep end with the men, where we believe the mean, the average, would not perform well.
Okay.
Or as well. And so you'd have two choices. You'd either ratchet back that which you do with the males, or you would see the women failing to meet that standard. And we tested upper body strength, you know, and it was pull-ups. We do pull-ups in the Marine Corps. And the men have to do three. That's the minimum to get out the door. And so we said, okay, we're going to do the same thing with women. They have to do three to get out the door, too. And we did a beta test over a year of that. And if we'd have done that, over 70% of the females that went through recruit training, I think 2 years ago when we did the test, would not have been able to graduate. Now, that doesn't help the Marine Corps at all. So we, you know, we have had to go back and forth on how we're going to do this. But to say that, you know,
hold on, let me,
integrating women from the day one of recruit training would prevent this from happening. I think what you're going to find out is all services are dealing with this problem.
Okay.
Not yet, but they will. And they all do that. So we're looking at how to adjust recruit training. And so that has the commandant's full attention. This issue has the commandant's full attention. And he's all in on this, okay? And I trust him to solve it, you know. So,
well, I mean, those of us that know him, when he tweeted out, I've got your back, I would tell you this. If he says that to me, or David J. Furness, if he looks at you and say, I've got your back, he'll die doing it, right?
Right.
He's not one of the guys that said it and not going to follow up. He'll die doing it. So if he says it, he's going to fix this. The do the numbers change in terms of pull-ups between the pool group that was looked at OCS relative to MCRD?
I think there's I don't know if this physical evidence, physiological evidence, that women maintain, you know, reach their kind of, you know, peak of physical strength later than men do. And so at 24, a college graduate is right there at that sweet spot. So we don't see the same issues. And that's why we are integrated at OCS and TBS.
But you don't see, you don't have a data point that you can say, hey, the failure rate went from 70% to 20% at OCS.
I do not.
Okay. All right.
There's probably that data's out there because we have data on everything. I'm just not aware of it. I can't point to a study and give you a specific, you know, date time group for a study that was done.
Okay. So when we look at recruit training, so let me ask you this. Do you think women are treated differently as poolees, as males are? And Kate Germano contends that they should be pushed harder and they're not. Or is that just her?
Well, that's just her personal
observation.
She's a woman and served 20 years in the Corps, so her perception of this is probably more finely tuned than mine. I'll give her that.
Right.
What I will say is when I was an RCO, I had to ship over 900 regular males to boot camp a year, and I had to ship 50 females. So the attention that I paid was commensurate with the size of the mission. Right. Does that make sense?
No, that's her, and that's her contention too, right? What are you going to be evaluated as a Marine officer? As a leader of Marines, what was she going to be? You're a fool not to focus on the 90%, right?
Right. So, right. I think what we're doing now, like I said, is we are prospecting. We're trying to prospect in athletic teams. The challenge there is, you know, female athletes in high school, they're paying high school sports. A lot of those go to college on, you know, some type of scholarship, whether it's full, partial, grant and aid, because of the Title IX requirements. So to get them to enlist, it's not the easiest road to go down.
Right.
We're looking at places that don't necessarily have the, like, soccer, basketball, field hockey, where you can go and play at the NCAA level, you know. That's why wrestling and fight, some of those other aspects is where we're trying to put time after it, because there's not a correlation there to go and be on the, you know, University of Virginia's, you know, female wrestling team, because I don't know that they have one. So what we can do is we can make a lot of hay there and get the type of person that would be predisposed to do really well and excel in the environment of training in the Marine Corps.
It makes sense, but I think, but if you're a talented female athlete, you have opportunities to go play in college, and so the Marine Corps is not going to be, you know, if we got a crack at you, we would get a crack at you
as an officer.
And
I think we do well there as officers.
Okay.
Quite a few of the females that come in the Marine Corps as female officers have played a college sport or two.
Right.
To go back to
recruit training, the Marine Corps sees this as crawl, walk, run in terms of being successful. So initially, so as not to subject them to, given the physical standards, always being last, and the negative attitude that would grow out of that, allowing them some time to assimilate, get their feet on the ground, get their physical, you know, conditioning better, and then in, you know, I don't know what week it would be, begin to do joint exercise. Do they do classroom stuff? Is all the classroom stuff integrated?
We're doing all that, and we're looking to see where we can do more, where it doesn't impact the schedules and whatnot.
Okay.
We are leaning forward into this. Again, part of it too is, and part of the, we totally reworked the POI, how we train our drill instructors. So we did that based off some of the things that happened in Siddiqui,
right.
But it's going to have a payoff here as well. And the fact of the matter is, they have the biggest impact on what Marines believe.
Right.
Okay. Coming out, you know, and that whole, you know, So everybody knows who their drill instructor was. So, and they have a lot of time with them. So we've got to make sure that they're not reinforcing bad behavior with personal bias.
Right.
And so how we train them, what we expect of them, how we supervise them. Okay. So we've, you know, doubled the supervisory capacity of officers down at the depots because of the Siddiqui incident, but that's also going to pay dividends here.
What does that mean? There's more officers down there?
There's more officers, right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
So we, which we do periodically when we have a problem down there, and then over the years, and it's like, hey, why do you have so many lieutenants and captains? You know, the fleet's screaming for them. Can we have some back? And then something will happen, and we'll put them back. So we're in the mode of we're putting them back now.
My guest is Brigadier General David Furness. He is the Commandant's head of legislative affairs on Capitol Hill, soon to be outgoing. We're fortunate enough to have him as we kind of move through the different pieces of the Marines United, one, issue, two, kind of the ramifications and a solution to that relative to recruit training and also the way we recruit women, period. So in terms of just one final question about that. So in terms of the OCS model, the OCS model works because of the age group and the physical capabilities of females at that age, 22 to 24, going through that for the most part. They're more physically capable, so it's easier to have them integrated in that way from the start.
True. And
okay.
Now, the other thing is we know – like, you know, you went to OCS, your sons went through it. I mean, we expect you to show up, you know, pushing, you know, 290 on the PFT.
Right.
So, now, do we expect that of male and female Marines going to recruit training? No.
What do we expect? I don't know.
I mean, they have to do an IST. They have to run a mile and a half in a certain time. They have to do two pull-ups. They have to, you know, but it's very low. It's not the same, you know.
Oh.
And so... Now, what we believe is, if you said, okay, you have to show up at that level. You know, we're using 13 weeks to try to get you to that level. You know, change a civilian into a Marine, and therefore, then at Marine combat training in your MOS school, we can train you as a Marine. For the officers, OCS is not training; it's evaluation whether we want to make you part of the club or not.
Right.
So we expect you to come in at the highest level of physical fitness, because all we're going to do there is just PT the snot out of you to see how you, as a pressure inducer, to see how you think, how you lead, how you make decisions in that environment, to whether or not you should be an officer of Marines. If we choose you to be an officer of Marines, then we send you to the basic course, commissioned. Now we're going to train you to be an officer. And we expect them to be same thing. I mean, the inventory PFTs at, you know, a TBS company, you know the deal.
Right.
I mean, if you don't do 20, 100, and, you know, 18-something, people are asking, what's wrong with you? Were you sick? So we do that because now we're pushing you from that level, and we get a lot more out of you. If we did that with the enlisted side, that would only work if we were a force like the British Royal Marines, you know, a couple thousand, you know, because you can't do that with a general purpose force, you know, 185, 200,000 Marines. Just can't.
I don't think most people.
You wouldn't be able to.
I don't think most people were aware. I don't think the average, even, you know, former Marine doesn't know that that's the standard today, that you go to OCS with a 290 PFT, right? I don't think most people are aware of that. Simply, it's like, well, what's the difference? It's a huge difference. It's a huge difference. All right.
Well, I mean, I can remember my own experience. I had tendon ice on my knees, and I ran like a 1930, and I got like, what's wrong with you? You know, and they're like, I'm like, well, you know, you know, I still scored a 294 or something. It was pretty good, I thought. that's the principal difference between OCS, TBS, and then recruit training is we're taking civilians. And we're going to transform them into Marines. And OCS is the longest job interview of your life. You know? So, we're going to see if you have what it takes to lead Marines. So you got to come prepared for that one. You don't necessarily have to come prepared to recruit training, because we're going to take you through, you know, what we expect of you day one is not what we expect of you day 96 or whatever it is.
All right. I've got an email. I've got an email question. Then can we take a break and then come back and talk about the barracks?
Sure.
Okay. Email question says, Mac, first of all, awesome to hear a general officer talking about this stuff, and truly appreciate it. It's one of the reasons why All Marine Radio has become a favorite of mine, because there's things you hear here that you don't hear any other place. By the way, the interview with Ned Seath was awesome. Do you know Ned Seath? Do you know that story? Machine gunner, Kilo 3-4, Vietnam?
No.
They're getting overrun. Squads are getting to command fixed bayonets, fighting as part of Operation Hastings in Vietnam.
Hastings. Right.
When somebody says Operation Hastings, your head would spin, right? Yes. Who just said that?
Right.
That would get your attention. Yeah. At night, fixed bayonets, and he's got three machine guns. One of them's been destroyed or partially destroyed by small arms fire. And then one of them the other two are shooting single shots, so they have spring issues. And so he takes them, and he's ripping them apart as they're in danger of being overrun, builds one machine gun out of it, and then begins to fire it. He's a big dude. He eventually has to stand up because there's so many bodies in front of him that he can't shoot anymore. So he goes into the offhand position, and by accounts kills over 100 NVA soldiers. He gets awarded the Navy Cross and the Bronze Star with a V for actions in 1965 in February of 2011. And
wow.
Yeah,
that's our award system, buddy. I love that.
But to hear him talking about the operation and what they went through is truly crazy. Anyway, let me read the rest of the email. I'm curious, when did we make the move to training in recruit training and not weeding out? I've read that. I've never really had a chance to ask anybody the question. But my understanding is that we don't weed out very much in recruit training, which was much different than the recruit training that I remember. Could the general explain that? Dave?
Well, I think, number one, one of the reasons is I don't know when this gentleman or lady came through, so it's hard for me to talk about. Attrition is a sine wave. Certain times in our history, it's higher at the depots. When I was a recruiter, we were running about 13% depot attrition. Today, we're running about 3%. Now, we attribute that to the quality going in right now has never been higher in the history of the Marine Corps by all measurable statistics. So, and the commandant likes that. He wants to keep it, and this is where we wrestle with how big are you going to get, how big do you need to get, will you be able to get there with the quality we have now? And so we don't have a high, you know, we have the lowest, you know, depot and first term attrition numbers for the past FY or calendar year. I don't know if they can counter FY, but that we've ever had. They're minuscule. Okay. Other services, some have double digits and some have over 20% combined. Now, if we had that, we'd be at general quarters. But the fact of the matter is we believe better quality going in, lower attrition, lower first-term attrition, which means that person, male or female, completes their first enlistment, gets a DD-214 honorable discharge and goes off to be a great citizen of the United States. That's what we want. And we're currently doing a pretty good job of that. So I don't know that the purpose – of recruit training, it was always training. That's why we called it recruit training. We, you know, you come in and we train you, we transform you to be a Marine from a civilian. And then now you're a trainable piece of gear, so to speak, and then you can go to MCT and your MOS school, and then you serve in the operational forces of the Marine Corps. OCS has always been, you're a candidate, you're getting evaluated to see if we want to commission you or not. And so I think, I don't know what OCS attrition is. I don't track it because, to be quite frank, nobody cares. And we don't have a problem. For every officer billet we have, every year there's a number we have to bring in. We have three really good applicants right now.
Three.
For everyone. Wow. So you got to really, like right now, if I was graduating, I'd have a hard time getting in, qualifying.
No, that's not true. Because, that's not true, but I understand what you're saying. Because,
no, I mean, I'm just saying these kids that we're taking now, when you look, I'm not saying that they'd be any better, but their statistics are off the chart.
Right.
You know? They're eye-watering, you know. I mean, I had a kid tell me, I went to a reunion, this was a couple years ago, because it was 5 years ago, actually. I was at my 25th reunion VMI, ran into two cadets. Hey, can you, sir, help me? I'm trying to get in the Marine Corps, but, you know, I'm kind of on a wait list. I said, well, okay, what's your GPA? Oh, I have a 3.6, you know, a double major. I'm a, you know, lacrosse player. I'm all this stuff. And I'm looking at another friend of mine who's just another general officer in the Marines, and we're like, God, I'm glad we got in what we did, because we weren't anywhere like that. So I just think when you look at it, we're being very, very selective now. We're not running waivers we used to run when I was an RSCO. We're not, you know, and that, we believe, has a positive effect on the level of attrition we have at recruit training. So quality in, quality out, and less spillage during the process, so to speak.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the barracks. And I'll just give you a little precursor. When in the course of doing the show, and you know, Gunner comes on 4 days a week and talks, and he and we talk about the Marine Corps and Marine issues and things like that. You know, we get from junior, it tends to be junior staff. I would say staff sergeant below, staff sergeant not junior, but I'd say staff sergeant below. That's not the way it is anymore. That there has been a fundamental change in the Marine Corps in terms of the way we live. The way we show up and go to formation has changed. Text messaging has changed. Gone are the days when the corporal is a power in the Marine Corps. He might be a little bit more senior, but he's looked at more as Lance Corporal Second Award. He's got no authority. He's got no power. And so I want to talk to you about that, because I know that when that whole kind of we're going to change the barracks to their home, you were in the midst of that. So we're going to take about a three and a half minute break, come back, and talk about that, if that's all right.
Yeah.
All right. David J. Furness, he's an Ohio State Buckeye fan and Battle Buddy times three. And he's being facetious. I mean, what do you call that? What were you, the Commandant of Cadets at VMI? What were you?
No.
What was that guy?
I was not the Commandant of Cadets. I held the rank of Cadet First Captain, which means nothing to anybody. So
I don't know. We found images of.
Well, there probably are some images out there.
There was,
I didn't put them anywhere.
It was. People found them, and there was one where he looked like he was knife edging somebody, and he had a little bit of an Irish pennant coming off a button, and that made the. I recall that made the rounds in Afghanistan. And we're going to start the next segment, speaking of Afghanistan, with a little audio clip from Sergeant Major Zikafus, one of the best guys I think either one of us have ever met in the Marine Corps. General Furness spent virtually every day of our time in Afghanistan with him, and now down at Southcom. But we're going to start with a little bit of audio of him talking about discipline. When we come back, more of All Marine Radio on a Wednesday, my guest, Brigadier General David Furness, right after this on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, military by owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, militarybyowner.com can help. Military by owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. Past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Life in the military is one of service and sacrifice. For some, that sacrifice includes physical and mental injuries or trauma that will affect their lives forever. Please join with the American Legion in recognizing and supporting our wounded warriors and their families. We need to show them that we truly are a grateful nation. We cannot allow them to be forgotten and left to fend for themselves.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave servicewomen. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Here on a Wednesday. Mike McNamara with you. All Marine Radio continues. Brigadier General David J. Furness. Won the George Marshall Award at BMI, too. Yeah. He doesn't advertise that very often, but he gets wirebrushed for it whenever I can. On a personal note, whenever I hear this song, I recall an experience of mine in a barbershop at Camp Fallujah, and so I figured I'd ask you about it. In Fallujah, the barbers, I think, were from Turkey, if I'm not mistaken. I don't. That's where the contract got awarded for whatever reason. And I remember the first time I went there, I sat down in the chair, and there's all these Marines in there. You wait your turn. And when the guy was done kind of cutting my hair, he looked, and he said, "Do you want the flame?" And
right.
I had no idea what the flame was, right? But I joke, and it's not too much of a joke, but, like, I'm not a pussy, though. So so what's my response? Yeah, do I want the flame? Of course I want the flame. And so do you did you have that experience, and how did you respond to it?
Well, they did flame me. Not a pleasant experience the first time when you weren't expecting it. So,
you know what?
It worked.
Exactly. It's but I love this story because we're Marines, man. Like I didn't even know what the flame
right.
is, but I'll tell you what, I'm not going to be a put. I'm in. I'm all in.
I want some of that. Cool.
Hey, give me two. What the hell? It's a barbershop. How about?
Double.
Yeah, give me mine and give me his too. All right. I want to ask.
Yeah, there was all that long stick, and they put it in alcohol, and they light it up there, and you're like, now I'm looking at it going, where's that going?
Yeah. Like, what's going on?
Right. Where's that going?
What is
okay.
The flame? I love that story, right? Because it's a cultural statement about us. The barracks.
Yeah.
A reoccurring theme is the barracks, and then the effect on the effect of what goes on in the barracks, who runs it, most importantly, who doesn't run it in the Marine Corps. And so I'm gonna play this audio from Sergeant Major Sickenfuss and about discipline, and then we'll talk about that issue. It's not exactly what I wanted to play.
It grows like the Doobie Brothers, baby.
At ease, Colonel.
We continue on a Tuesday.
Good. You know, to make a unity better on the battlefield, this makes it that much more effective. How many square feet? How many square miles we had?
No, Ao Montezuma. It was bigger than shit.
Yeah, I can't even remember, but we were on.
That's a technical term, bigger than shit, by the way.
On the road, as you know, like 21 days out of the month. it was this great experience getting out there and seeing Marines and sailors doing great things on the battlefield. But seeing the different units and how they do things, you know, some did it really well, some did it not as good. Some were more disciplined. That's where you saw what a disciplined unit looks like at that level. You know, you see all the little things you do to make it good, you know, to make a unity better on the battlefield. This makes it that much more effective. You know, you get it's a bigger perspective. I still think discipline is one of the biggest keys in combat, and I think Marines do it better than anybody.
I think it's one of the... All right, we're going to talk about discipline. How good does it feel to hear that voice, though? You and he are great friends.
I just talked to him this morning.
How's he doing?
I mean, I didn't know. He's doing good. He's flying back from what they call Keystone, which is Sergeant Majors. They're going to work for 3 and 4 stars. Doing well.
All right, so let's talk about discipline. Explain the change in how barracks are viewed in the Marine Corps historically. I mean, we've migrated from the Quonset hut, open squad bays, to the Vietnam era kind of concrete buildings with squad bays. To then we put partitions up in those and had kind of single areas to the high rises that I was a part of when I got to 1-5 at Camp Pendleton, and then that were 2-man rooms or 3-man rooms depending on how much occupancy you had, blah 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 blah. But Every company had a diagram. The rooms got inspected. Field day was managed up in those areas by the staff NCOs and the NCOs, and it was your area, and they did it the way you told them to. To now, I'll let you describe the way these beautiful BEQs are, by the way. They're absolutely beautiful. I would tell you they're better than any college dorm I've ever seen in terms of the facilities and the way Marines get to live today. General, is that true, not true? And then walk us through how we view those as how you viewed them as a regimental commander.
Well, first of all, let me go backwards. I grew up, my first platoon was in a squad bay, like you said, concrete building, open squad bay. I had an office in the squad bay, me and my platoon sergeant shared. Sergeants had a room in the back, and there was two rooms in the back of the squad bay. So you normally didn't have, a sergeant, you normally didn't have more than two. If you did, they were doubled up in those rooms. And then you had a series of wall lockers that were faced a certain way, and behind those you had an area where your corporals were, so they had a little bit more privacy. And then the men were out racks, just like they went to boot camp, pretty much. They had a foot locker and a wall locker, that's it. So let's fast forward. The first thing that I did upon assuming command of 1st Battalion, 1st Marines was, okay, let me go see the barracks. Let me see how my Marines are living. Walked through every room. And then said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Now, I just think how your Marines live directly correlates to how they perform on the battlefield. I believe that. And I believe that if you want to fix big problems like Rudy Giuliani, you stop people from jaywalking, spitting on the sidewalk, and that has a bigger impact, like Malcolm Gladwell said. His book, I think it was, I can't remember the name of it. I've read about four or five of them, but it has an exponentially greater impact than the actual policy that you're trying to enforce. For the Marine Corps, discipline is a hallmark of everything we do. And if you're going to further distribute the force across the battlefield like we did in Helmand, it puts more challenges to the discipline that you have at lower levels. So whereas it's fairly easy for a company commander with his company all under his command and control. He sees it. He can, he's living in it. It's all around him. Easier for him to affect that. Now, you spread that company out over, hell's half acre like we did in Afghanistan. Now the person that's holding everybody accountable is a corporal or sergeant. So they have to buy. Well, they ain't going to buy in if you didn't teach them how to do that in peacetime. So my point to all of this is, if your barracks are out of control, then I would blame the leadership. And if, like one day I pray and hope that I'm going to be, CG, 1st Marine Division. If that day ever comes, how we live is going to be dictated. It's not going to be up, it's not, well, this isn't Burger King. You can get to have it your way, okay? Everything reinforces the ability to put steel on target. And I believe, just like you remember, hey, here's how the room is organized. This is what's under your bed. Here's what's in your wall locker. And then you have to obviously make some adjustments that we didn't have to because everybody's got a TV now or something. They've got PlayStations and video games and stuff like that. But you have to regulate that stuff. Like, hey, this is what you're allowed to have here. The other thing you have to have in the barracks that we've got away from is you got to have leadership. Like I said, my first barracks had two or three sergeants in the back, six or seven corporals, and then you had 30-some-odd junior enlisted. And they all lived in the same room, essentially. Let me tell you something. The shenanigans that went on in that room after we weren't there far less than go in on barracks routinely. Now, why greater leadership involvement? We need to get back.
Hey, Marines laugh. If you ask, remember in the squad bays, there were curtains that separated where the corporals lived, and they'd get these curtains made down in the Philippines or in Okinawa or someplace. and they would have, like, you know, the platoon motto or whatever on it, and you would see the chevrons of the corporal sewn on them, right? And then when you went to the sergeant area, and you asked Marines, would you ever dreamed of walking through that curtain and just walking in there? Like not in a million years. Would I have not, this is how crazy the Marine Corps is, would I have not knocked on the curtain?
Right, ask permission.
Right. You knocked on the curtain? Oh, hell yeah. How do you do that? I'm not exactly sure, but you do it. And you are allowed to come in. That was the kind of organization and structure that world had, and it was pretty good in terms of keeping things between the left and right lateral limit. Anyway, I interrupt. I apologize.
No, I mean, I think, you know, so number one, there was a way to separate, like you actually arrived when you got to move behind the curtain. So there's a way to do that. I think now the problem is everybody's in the same room, and part of it is what you have to empower young NCOs. There's a certain way you do that. You and I have talked a lot about that right. over the years. And I think that's commander's business, how you do that. But what you don't do is say, I trust you so much, I want you to move out of the barracks. I'm like, no, you need to stay in the barracks because I need you in the barracks. You know, my experience in the barracks, as a regimental commander, I was a GO Bassler. So was Sergeant Major Zickafoos. We lived in the barracks. Okay, I paid $3 a day to live in the barracks. I ate at the chow hall. I never left Camp Horno. So on the weekend, with everybody else, would swoop and go do whatever it is they do, go to their families, go out, run around Southern California. Me and Sergeant Major Zickafoos were there Saturday morning, Saturday night, Sunday morning, and so you get to understand what's going on in the barracks. Okay, Marines drink too much in the barracks. And you know that, and so, but that's also in violation pretty much of, you know, the orders and regulations, because not everybody's 21, they shouldn't be drinking there. And whether I agree that Marines, you know, should have a drinking age, because I think if you're old enough to fight for your country and die for it, you should be able to have a beer. However, I don't get to make that call, so you enforce the rules and regulations. But I can tell you, you know, we make it too easy. You know, we sell beer too cheap at the 7-day store. It's right in the middle of the camp. People go there Friday afternoon. They take their two cases up. And by the end of the weekend, those are the cans that are surrounding every dumpster in Camp Horno. And the bottom line is, dumb stuff happens when an 18-year-old imbibes in alcohol to the point where he's not conscious or very, you know, he's been severely affected by alcohol. So a whole bunch of stuff. Hazing occurs.
Right.
We learn to treat each other poorly. There's, if women are involved, you have a unit that's, you know, co-educational, that's when bad stuff occurs. You know, 53% of all our sexual assaults happen in the barracks. So we've got to take back that space. It doesn't need to be undone from, you know, 16:30 on a Friday to 08 on Monday. Or after every day, you know, every day of the week after we secure. So leadership needs to be attuned to that. I mean, when I had a hazing problem in 1-1, and I had one, you start putting fire watches on the deck, you know, walking around as part of interior guard so that nonsense doesn't occur. I mean, it's a commander's business to secure his area. So my point is, if you want to do shenanigans, I'll have everybody on firewall. You know, and, you know, we're going to win this battle, and we can by explaining what we're trying to do to the Marines. And, you know, why do you care if it's flip-flops, PT shoes, one set of boots, one set of civilian shoes, under, you know, lined up, toes not exceeding the front edge of the rack, okay? Because it teaches them attention to detail, which will save their life. And it's not like attention to detail is something you draw at the SIF, and you get some right before you deploy, and you're good to go. You're inoculated, or the doc hits you with a attention to detail shot. You have got to instill it from the first day. That's what boot camp does. And then we get them in the fleet, and we just let them do whatever they want a lot of times. A lot of units do.
Well, and then I go back to Sergeant Major Zickenfoot. You're going to fight. You're going to fight based on the discipline that you have, and you teach that discipline in garrison, and the way you live. And so when you back off, which brings us to the series of emails that I continue to get from young sergeants and corporals that say, that's not the way it is anymore. What happened in the Marine Corps when this became their quote-unquote dormitorium?
Well, I think a lot of the attendant social issues we deal with pop up. You know, I'll go with suicides. Now, again, this may be naive thinking. I mean, I guess we probably did have suicides when we were living in squad base. But you know what? I don't remember any. You know? Now, maybe I've just been lucky that they're having it in my unit. But you don't have any privacy, so you don't have the space to do things that you shouldn't be doing. So I think we just need to own that space or regulate that space.
Did you give it away as a regimental commander? Because I heard this concept of, no, that's their private area now. It's not ours anymore. And I talked to a company commander as recently as 2 weeks ago, and when this subject came up, and I said, well, let me ask you this. He said, it's not that way anymore. It's their space.
There's no order that says it's their space.
There isn't.
No. And I think, you know, now, there is a belief that, well, you don't do that to the married Marines, so why should you do it to them? Well, hey, look. I'm not trying to make the barracks a place where guys just want to get married to get out of the barracks. Because if you're thinking about doing that, don't. It's a poor choice, okay, if that's the reason you're getting married. But I am trying to create an environment of discipline that reinforces the attributes of being a Marine you need to survive and thrive on a modern battlefield. And I believe it all starts from a foundation in discipline, doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. And what Sergeant Major Zikafus and I saw in Afghanistan is units, the enemy, he inflicted casualties on us, but there was never a time, I think, and all the casualties we took were when you didn't field strip the event, what you found was we didn't do something that we were trained to do, consciously or unconsciously, and nobody intervened to say, hey, God, you know, we got to, you know, square ourselves away. Or they were doing something they were told not to do. And so you put yourself more at risk vis-a-vis the enemy, and he took advantage of it. And it goes back to discipline. The better disciplined units, the ones that had better leadership and they cared about those little things, performed better on the battlefield. Period, full stop. So my point being is, I believe that. And I believe more than that,
we lived it. And I know this because this is the stuff that I used to track because I used to watch our battle space every day. You heard Sergeant Major say, Zikafu say, they would be gone 21 out of 30 days. Well, on those 21 days, myself and General Furness, we would have dialogue on kind of a Merc chat thing that he had in his vehicle. And he used to laugh and say, hell, I'm better informed about what the regiment does when I'm away than when I'm back, because I sit and talk to Mac every day. But I used to watch our battle space, and I can tell you this, and the numbers are, of the last 30 Marines that we had killed in Helmand Province between 2010 and 2011, and I think this goes from like January of 2011 to when we left at the end of August, September time frame. Of the 30 Marines that were killed, 19 of them were our fault. It's not like they inflicted it on us. We did something that we should not have done. And so one of the things that happened as this thing kind of unfolded, you guys, everybody who listens has met the two people that were all over this issue. One was Mike Musselman talking about going and talking to battalion gunners and sergeant majors and everybody commanders that he could talk to about, hey, we have to stop doing these things, all right? Probing with bayonets, with knives for pressure plates, you know, stop doing that, okay? Call EOD, set on it, I know it's hot. Where did you learn this? Well, my squad leader used to do that, stomping that kind of behavior out. And the other guy who was adamant about it was a colonel at the time, David Furness. And so, but it goes back to discipline. And so I want to kind of loop this. We bring them in, we put them through boot camp, the crucible and all that. They come to then they go through, you know, MCT and SOI and they finally get to the operating force. They now go to a dormitorium where, in my opinion, they backslide towards being more civilian instead of more Marine. And then,
if you allow it as the commander.
If you, okay. No, all right. So that's, so then the problem, then, in my opinion, then the problem is commanders, you don't have the balls to say, yeah, this is the way you're going to live. And this isn't a college dormitory. If you want that experience and you join the wrong fraternity, you know, you pledge to the wrong group because you're going to be a Marine. And boom, hit the audio. Sergeant Major Zickafoos talks about discipline. Good order and discipline starts here by the way we live, by the way we do this, by the way we take care of this building, by the statement we make about ourselves, by the way we report to work. Because then when we have that together, when we go to fight, we're going to be a better organization. And, oh, by the way, when you backslide towards the way I live this as a civilian, then the change isn't forever. And then these social behaviors that I – this is just me, right? I'm extrapolating on it. Then these social behaviors that I thought maybe the Marine Corps would embrace – you know, why not? You know, it seems like this is negotiable and kind of an a la carte issue. Why not engage in those behaviors? And so the change may not be forever because we backslide. And so I guess my question to you is the way that commanders allow our barracks to be turned into dormitories, and since there is no Marine Corps order about it, then to me, it certainly is having a detrimental effect on good order and discipline in the Marine Corps. And that's just me from the people I bump into and what I read.
I could not agree more.
Might be the smartest thing I've ever heard come out of your mouth.
Of course, if you would, you know. But, I mean, and that's, you know, you've got commanders, if they're worried about being liked, I don't know what the deal is. But I think part of it is 15 years of war. You know, some of this we didn't do because all we had time to do was go through the training syllabus, get them on the plane, get them over there, fight, bring them back, reset them, do the same thing over and over and over again. So what you don't get with a 2-to-1 or a 1-to-1 depth to dwell ratio is you don't get time back at home station, Camp Pendleton, Camp Lejeune, 29 Palms, to teach them and further deepen the transformation. And we're suffering from it now. And so what now we have, if you were a second lieutenant.
Okay, hold on. Let me tell you, and I'll try to quote it from my memory, from a sergeant. Sorry, I listened to your program. Things are not the same in the Marine Corps. 15 years of war masked a fundamental change of young people in this country. And the loosening of the way we live in our barracks has allowed them to backslide. You said it almost verbatim in terms of the urgency we felt going to combat masked kind of a change. Maybe, I don't know. And again, I don't want to bag on the millennials because let me tell you, we've seen them fight. And when you create the structure and you have the standard, they'll come to it and they'll be absolutely incredible. But there is, I would say, a problem, and you almost stated his email verbatim in this period of war where all we were doing was fighting. There was an edge to the Marine Corps. There was an edge to the guys who had multiple combat tours and were corporals. You didn't have to tell them that they were going to be in charge because they were going to live what Jeremiah Workman has lived. And that is, I won the Navy Cross because I killed 24 shitheads. I lost 3, and I can't get over it because I blame myself for that. They knew that. And they didn't take any shit from anybody. And so we had an edge to us. And now as we get away from that, right, I've got my rights and this is, you can't tell me what to do and all that kind of shit creeps back in, exacerbated. So, but I guess what you're telling me is it's a commander problem relative to the barracks.
Well, look, if you remember when we got back to Horno, all the stuff we did to try to correct, you know, we'd been gone for a year and it was like, friggin' Lord of the Flies back there. You know, nobody cared about what anybody did. And it took the rest of those 9 months to tighten the screws so that I felt it was moving in the right direction. But it's something that you never get complacent about. you know, and, you know, the outlook of your area, the police, your barracks and your grounds, you know, how you organize your room, how you fall out in the morning, how do you go to PT, all those things have to be done the Marine Corps way. And when units do them over time, when you first start, it's just like working out for the first time, and when you haven't done it for a while, you're sore, people complain, they don't like it. But over time, they get used to it. And I'm not saying you scream and yell. I can sit there and have a very rational discussion with whatever NCOs you want to put. I try to get buy-in first, but the bottom line is, if you're saying, sir, I think you think you know better than us, and I'd look him in the eye and go, no, you're right. I do know better than you, okay? I've been doing this for 30-some years. I got 7 combat deployments. This is why I'm doing it. You don't want to get on my program? I will do my best to get you out of my unit, but, hey, the Marine Corps may tell me you can't. You're stuck with Smith or Jones, and you're just going to have to suck it up, but we're doing it my way. I have some left and right deviancy. You may convince me to change something. The bottom line is there's a foundation of discipline that I'm not willing to negotiate. There you go.
Yeah, I think we're not. I think that's not where we're at as a Corps anymore. And let me tell you, and the sergeants and corporals that have either written me or that I've spoken with, they are dying for somebody to stand up and say that.
You know, if I was a CG of the 1st Division, I would never be in the CP. I'd be walking around just like I did in Afghanistan. I'd be walking around with Sergeant Major trying to find things, trying to correct things. You know, trying to find that unit that wasn't doing it the way I wanted them to do it. And then not only would I correct the devil dogs, but I'd mosey on down to the CP and say, hey, why aren't you doing this? Why am I correcting this guy? Okay? You know, captain, lieutenant colonel. And you do that enough in our organization, you know what happens.
Right. Sure.
Everybody starts getting on board. It ain't hard to correct it.
No, I remember, I'll tell you a quick story. General Kelly out and about in as a Brigadier General Assistant Division Commander in 2004 went down towards south of Baghdad, Mamadiya, Iskandaria, went to see a battalion, I won't name it, and the shitters hadn't been burned.
Right.
They were full of shit. You had this pyramid of shit, and it was just filthy. And so he went out there, came back in, he said, hey, what's going on with that? Well, the shit sucker truck, which are actually gold-plated items, you know, in terms of their value, is broken. And why haven't we burned it? And he got the stupid look, and he said, hey, look, I'm going to be gone. Get that cleaned up. Marines don't live like that. Comes back later on that day. Nothing's been done. He walks out there, comes back into CP, looks at a corporal and said, hey, do you have a police shed? Yes, sir. And with that, he goes in and gets a set of rubber gloves. He gets cleaner and some scrub brushes and a bucket, and he heads out back to the shitter. And now everybody, starting with the sergeant major, says, where's he going? And the corporal said, I think he's going back out to the shitter to clean him. And the sergeant major said, oh, my God, where's the CO? So the sergeant major finds the CO. Now they're looking out the window, and then they head out there. And Kelly had their ass. And, you know, for not burning, look, the shit sucking truck, that's great. If it doesn't work, shovel this stuff out, right? Dig a slit trench, make some other arrangement, but we don't live like this. But that wasn't the standard, right? The standard is what that colonel accepted. So I think the Marine Corps is coming off a standard, and I will tell you this, and I won't cut the link between coming off that standard and the whole Marines United event, where, you know what, my behavior as a civilian, I can coexist in this place. And the answer to that is our own advertisement, which is the change is forever. But when you come off that, then it becomes negotiable, and that's always a bad, bad thing.
I always just said you can't choose which order or regulation you like and which order and regulation you don't like. They all matter. You have to enforce each and every one of them as if you drew them up yourself. Proudest day of my life. Regimental commander. I'm going to the gym, the new gym there in Horno. I run out of CP. You know, part of a regulation, Marine Corps regulation, is you wear green on green, and that shirt's tucked in. And I hate tucking in a shirt, PT shirt. I think it's stupid, but that's the rule. So I don't have my shirt tucked in. I'm running to the gym. This sergeant runs across the friggin' grinder like he's got an angle on me. I'm like running to the end zone. And I'm looking at him coming. I'm like, what's this guy doing? He gets right up beside me, and he goes, hey, sir, I need to talk to you. I stop. I go, yeah. He goes, sir, you need to tuck your shirt in. And I go, yes, I do. Thank you. Tucked my shirt in, went on my day. You know, that's what good units do. They look out for everyone. Now, I was always over guys doing that stuff. So if this was a way to get back at me, I get it. But the bottom line is that's what I want them doing. So, hey, I got to go. I got a job. I'm like blowing people off my schedule.
That's fine. And, that's fine. No, well, let me just on a very serious note. Thank you for doing this. There's been a thirst, I can tell you, for the people that listen to this program, to hear general officers speak about this, to talk about, hey, what we can do, what we're struggling to figure out, and where we're not sure we can go. And thank you for coming on and painting that picture. Truly appreciate it, and have a great day.
I would just say we're gonna fix this. Commandant is committed to fixing it. We'll get after it like we always do, like we got after drugs, like we got after racism. We'll get after it. It'll be just as hard as those two, probably, but we'll win. We always do. So I think they can. From the headquarters on down, everybody's committed. This is a stain on our honor, and we're going to fix it. So that's all I'd say to the listeners.
Got it. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Mac.
You bet.
Take care.
You bet. Let me just, I got an email that talked about these guys that don't have social media accounts are going to fix the social media problem in the Marine Corps. And to that, I would say they are. And I would say this. Thank God that leadership in the world, or the Marine Corps in particular, isn't defined by whether you have a social media account. And to anybody who that thinks that is any sign of some kind of achievement, you need to take a look at yourself. 7 combat deployments, leading Marines from company level to the regimental level. You want that guy solving the problem. As he just said, it's a stain on our honor. So whether they have social media accounts, I don't know that that's significant. I think they ought to, simply because they can understand the problem a little bit. Do they need to be on them and all that kind of stuff? Probably not. And I don't know that even if they had one, let's just say that the commandant said, no, you got to have one. You got to have a Facebook account, and you got to have at least with your family on it, right? So small circle. Would that help them further understand the nefarious side of this? I don't know that it would. I don't know that it would. I will say this. Pretty interesting discussion with him. The Marine Corps has got a problem. And I think the problem isn't Marines. Marines will do what's expected of them. This whole concept is of the barracks as their place is a cancer in the Marine Corps. You join the Marine Corps, all right? And what did Lieutenant General Milstead say a week ago? You ride for the man, you wear the brand. Dave Furness just said, hey, you don't pick and choose which orders you obey in the Marine Corps. And so, to me, I think commanders, they have to be more demanding. Hey, this is the way we're going to live. This is the way we go to formation. And if you can't do the basics, God help you doing the more complex shit. And really, and I'll bring this back to junior leaders. They're the ones that get hurt the most. Because when the infrastructure of the Marine Corps goes away, they have nothing then. They have absolutely nothing. So, maybe that's an article in the Marine Corps, in the Marine Corps Gazette. How we live. Backsliding into being a quasi-civilian who works as a Marine. Interesting stuff. We're going to take a quick break. Yeah, almost 2 hours. Holy smokes. David J. Furness. Interesting stuff. More of Almarine Radio coming next here on a not much more, though. I'll tell you about what we're going to try to do tomorrow here on the program. And, let me read you another email. Hey, Mac. General Furness. What an interesting couple hours to spend with him, from his perspective, from legislative affairs. Certainly interesting to hear him talk as a former recruiter as well. I think it's easy to come on and lay out a solution when you begin to footnote it with numbers. For instance, the study relative to females at 70% in the study over the course of a year could not do 3 pull-ups when they left boot camp. That's pretty amazing. The other numbers that are amazing is a 290 PFT to go to OCS is what male Marines are told they're to be expected to do. That's incredible. 290, max in the PFT to go. Wow. The other numbers, and I sat here and wrote them down on my blotter as I listened. The other number, 35,000 in and 35,000 out, first-termers on an annual basis. Wow. 60% of the Marine Corps. And then he asked me, hey, Mac, do the number. What is that? Well, let's say 184,000 times 0.6 equals 114,000. So 184 times 0.6 equals 110,000. So 110,000 out of the 184,000 are under the age of 25. Isn't that crazy? 92% male. And following the edict of Sergeant Major Zickenfries yesterday, why do they come in the Marine Corps? They want to be badasses. They want to kick some ass. So we bring them that to that environment. So I think the Marine Corps has issues, cultural issues, the way we live issues, and we're trying to make it too nice. And then some of this behavior then becomes acceptable. And my own opinion is that needs to change. So we're going to take a quick break. This hour of Almarine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only Battle Mug home security device. I say that because if you punch somebody with it, they're going down. Starts out as a 10.5-pound block of aluminum. It's milled, machined, and anodized and ready for you to make your own. Each one is serialized, capable of being engraved on the bottom with name, rank, unit emblem, stuff like that. Very cool. And as I've often said, mine wears the blue diamond of the 1st Marine Division. Battle Mug is a perfect gift for farewells, promotions, and retirements, and any other occasion. You can check out the full line of products, and there's a bunch of cool ones at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. The Battle Mug is a Marine-originated, veteran-owned company, and it's made entirely in the United States. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch that dial.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.